T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We all know it's important to get our kids reading, but how do you motivate children to read? And how important is it for them to see themselves in the things that they do read? This is Debbie Monterey, and Julius B. Anthony of St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature joins me on KMOX Profiles.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome to KMOX Profiles. I'm Debbie Monterey, and my guest today is Julius B. Anthony, and you are the president of St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature.
Yes, I am, and excited about that as well.
First, to start, tell us about St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature.
Absolutely. So our core mission is to ensure that all children become confident and competent readers by the end of third grade. And we do that by creating these interesting, innovative opportunities to connect children with books and create spaces that will allow them to fall in love with books.
Now, do you have to be a Black author of children's literature to be in your organization?
Absolutely not. But what we do require is that as an author, you have written a story for children, particularly kids that are probably in kindergarten through third grade or preschool through third grade, and that story focuses on a protagonist or character that is Black or African-American, or the story subject line focuses on something that's relevant to the Black experience.
Well, let's delve into that just a little bit, because it's difficult, I think, for a lot of us as parents to get our kids to read these days with so many other distractions. But specifically, for children of color, they have not traditionally seen themselves represented in children's books. And I think if you are a white American, you probably have never thought about that, because you've always picked up books and the kids look like you.
Sure.
Talk about how important that is in getting a kid interested.
It's hugely important. And so I want to share a couple of things about that. First, I like to share just a piece of data. So the International Literacy Association, which is the largest body of professionals that kind of work in the literacy space. So we're talking about teachers, principals, administrators. They wrote a white paper back in 2014, and they suggest that in American classrooms, particularly public education, less than 6% of the text that's presented to the children in those spaces tell stories about the Black experience or include a person that is a Black heritage as the focus of the text. And so when you think about that, when you think about being a Black child in a classroom and you're in that school from, let's say, August to April, and less than 6% of the information really tells stories about your experience, in a way, it kind of renders you invisible in the learning process. And it makes it less likely for you to really connect to the things that the teacher wants you to learn. And so there's all these sort of like science things in education that we talk about, like prior knowledge and having a context for the information that's presented to you. So if you're a kid, you've never been to a lake before, you've never been to a farm before, but the information that the teacher is presenting to you is a story about a farm or about visiting a lake or about going to the zoo, and the characters or the main people in that story don't look like you or have your experiences, then it's less likely for you to connect with the material. However, if you are a kid who's lived on a farm or who's visited a lake or who's gone to the zoo and you've had that experience, then you walk into the learning situation with some prior knowledge. And a lot of times for many Black children, and particularly in the St. Louis metropolitan region, they don't have those opportunities. They don't have opportunities to have those kinds of experiences. But there are stories out there that include them as a character that talks about a Black kid that has gone to a lake, you know, Lake Michigan before, or a Black kid who has spent the day with his family at the zoo. And a lot of times if the kid can just see themselves in that story, they don't always need the prior knowledge. They immediately hook in because they say, oh, somebody else like me has had this experience before. And so it's really important from that perspective that we really change that trajectory, that we give our children more opportunities to see themselves in the classroom with the things that they are learning.
Because the child might just think that, oh, well, this doesn't apply to me, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's admit it. I'm sure you could say that you and your son has gone to the zoo before, right?
Yes.
Okay. So have you ever seen a picture book that had a Black child in it that spent the day at the zoo?
No.
Okay. Those books are out there. But here's the challenge. And I guess we're going down a different road now. But part of the challenge is with the major book companies and the kinds of materials that they're putting out into sort of like the picture book, children picture book ecosystem. And so a lot of times they get to determine what those books are. And most often their catalog are filled with books that are basically about historical figures, Dr. King, Rosa Parks, but they don't always tell the everyday stories of Black children and Black families. However, there's this huge community of self-published authors who write stories like that. They're out there, but they don't get the broader sort of recognition or attention because they're not a part of a major book company. And so our organization has been really good about connecting with people like that and trying to give them more exposure, more experience, and getting their material out because it's all about distribution now. It's all about how many people can get a copy of your book. And if you're not a major distributor like a Scholastic or a Penguin, then you're pretty limited. And so our organization in this short period of time of being together or being active, we've had all of this goodwill and have had opportunities to start getting self-published authors' books into schools, into that whole world of children's picture book stories or adolescent readers. So we're really excited about that. We're hoping that as a result of that, then more kids can get an opportunity to see themselves in classrooms.
Julius B. Anthony is my guest, and we're talking about getting kids to read, which is such an important goal for all kids, but especially the children that we're talking about who may not have traditionally been interested because they didn't see themselves in those books, but also who are living in areas where, let's talk about the Promise Zone, because
sure.
It is a designated area in St. Louis, but I think a lot of our listeners may not even be really familiar with what the Promise Zone is. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So the Promise Zone was a concept that was created by President Clinton when he was in office, and it came out of a project in Harlem called the Harlem Project Zone. Started by Jeffrey Canada. And basically what Mr. Canada did was he looked at eight neighborhoods or eight blocks within the city of Harlem. And well, the city is New York, but the area of Harlem. And he decided to put a lot of resources and programs in those eight neighborhoods. And he said to educate or to support people from the cradle to the grave. And so he created all of these new schools, all of these housing programs, and they put a lot of philanthropic dollars into that community. And the children in those communities really began to thrive, particularly educationally, as well as families. And so President Clinton thought that was a great idea. And so he started this project called the Promise Zone Communities throughout the U.S. And they are basically those neighborhoods that have a high concentration of people that are living in poverty, based on the national poverty guidelines. And typically that's based on schools in those neighborhoods or communities that are receiving high percentages of free or reduced lunch. And neighborhoods that had a significant concentration of people that you would probably consider working class families. And in those neighborhoods, the federal government decided to put a lot of resources to do a lot of the same things that Jeffrey Canada did with the Harlem Zone Project. And so in St. Louis, when we think about the Promise Zone neighborhoods in those communities, the best way to think about them are the school districts that serve those communities. And so we say that there are 8 Promise Zone communities in our region: St. Louis City, Jennings, Normandy, University City, Ferguson Florissant, Hazelwood, Riverview Gardens, and East St. Louis. And those are the communities that we would consider the Promise Zone communities. And you can actually apply for federal dollars to support all kinds of things that will help ensure that those communities are thriving.
So when we talk about those Promise Zones, a large percentage of our children of color are going to school in those districts.
90%.
90%. And so they may not have the same resources, obviously, as kids who are growing up in a West County district.
Yeah. But think about that. 90% of Black children in the St. Louis metropolitan region are attending a school in the Promise Zone neighborhoods. Now, just sit with that for a moment. That's pretty interesting to me. And what it says is that it's not just most of our children are growing up in poverty, but most of the Black families in this region are living in poverty, or they're working class families, which we now consider the working poor. So that's a pretty interesting sort of situation. And so what we have to think about is, what do we do to come out of that kind of experience? And personally, I think literacy is part of the solution. Just making sure that as an adult, you are fully literate. And the body of research suggests that if you're not on or above grade level in reading at the end of third grade, then you have a harder time, first of all, making it to 12th grade. You have a harder time getting into a college or a university. And then you have a harder time navigating life as an adult. And so it all begins at the beginning. It all starts from preschool to third grade. If you're not a reader by then you have a difficult time in life. And I think that impacts your ability to have a thriving family, or a family that is able to take care of themselves well.
We're talking about literacy, literally changing the course of people's lives. When we come back, we'll talk more about exactly how St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature is going about that, and another program that they spearhead that is trying to get more books into kids' hands and to get them reading. Stay with us here on KMOX Profiles.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back to KMOX Profiles. We're talking about reading and how to change the course of people's lives through literature and literacy. Julius B. Anthony is the president of St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature. And I am assuming that you love to read. Is that safe to say?
Very safe to say.
Yeah, I love to read too. I mean, if I had more time for anything, it would be like, could there be more time for reading?
Right.
I feel like it's one of my great failures as a mother that I have a book in my hand all the time.
Wow.
I'm reading a book and I'm listening to a book, you know, recorded book in the car. I'm always reading, and I can barely get my kids to crack a book.
Now, that's really interesting. So I grew up in this family where there were a lot of kids. So my parents, we grew up in the Jeff Vanderloo community, which has always been a working class community and a huge concentration of folks that are just growing up in poverty. I attended Dunbar Elementary School, which is part of the St. Louis public school system. My dad was a Baptist minister. He was also by trade what was called back then a porter, but he was basically a maintenance person for Central Hardware. And my mom was a school teacher. She worked in the school system. And we grew up in this community where school and your faith-based institution were the most two important institutions in the community, aside from family. And so even in our faith-based situation, that was really important to us. And we got a lot of literacy experiences there. We got a lot of literacy experiences at home. We got a lot of literacy experiences at school. And my parents were avid readers. We saw them read all the time. And we did this thing on the weekend because our faith was really important to us. And at our church, you went to Sunday school on Sundays. And so my dad was actually the superintendent of the Sunday school, which meant that you had to have your lesson ready on Sunday morning. But on Saturday night, we would spend time reading the Sunday school lesson so that we would be ready for the Sunday school class on Sunday morning. All of those were models of literacy that were instituted in our home. Now, reading isn't the only thing that contributes to literacy. Language contributes to it. You know, how you're socialized into language in your family. And
the studies about how many words a child should hear by the time they start talking.
Absolutely. And a lot of that does have to do with the environment that you grow up in, that you're socialized in. So one of the things that my parents used to do, because we had to eat together as a family. There was no such thing that you get to eat when you want to eat. You ate when dad came home. We ate at the kitchen table. And my father did this thing where he instituted some topic at the dinner table. And we were all supposed to contribute to the topic or have something to say about it. Now, you always had to agree with his point of view.
But for the sake of argument,
he wanted you to say something to contribute to it. Those are all literacy experiences. And see, those are the simple things that we can start sharing with parents and families like yours and others of ways to really get your kids hooked in. Sometimes it's not always just giving them a book, but it's doing all of those other kinds of things, getting things that they're interested in and talking about it, and then finding a book that connects to it or finding an audible book. If that's the way that they get interested into reading, let that be the pathway, you know, or maybe it is a television show because that's literacy as well. It might even be music, you know, so sometimes we have to get beyond just giving them a book, but give them other kind of broader experiences. So when they get hooked in, then when you present a book that they're really interested in, they'll take it. And
it took me a while to accept graphic novels because I felt like that was so lazy. And I was like, no, you need to read a book. But then I thought, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever you're reading, just read it.
Yeah. And you and probably a million teachers in America hate. Well, I can't. The hate is a strong word. But they do not like the graphic novel thing. But here's the fact of the matter. Graphic novels are very popular, particularly for kids that are adolescents or just starting the whole chapter book thing. And, you know, in about fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, those kids love graphic novels. And my opinion is if that's the thing that hooks them into the literature, let it be so. And now book companies are getting really smart. They're taking some of the great novels and turning them into graphic novels as a pathway for kids to get hooked into reading. So
now when we talk about getting kids hooked into reading, let's talk about the Believe Project, because we've talked about how many words a kid needs to hear as they're babies and into toddlers, and how to get them these literacy experiences that a lot of kids, unfortunately, are not getting. So by the time that child is in kindergarten or first grade, if they haven't had those experiences, now how do you get them on that path to reading and being literate? And is that kind of the background of the Believe Project?
It absolutely is. It's something that we are just super, super excited about. Because so much goodwill has been put around this opportunity for children. So essentially what we are doing is we're creating these spaces in community centers and in schools where children can fully be themselves and grow their own agency around reading in books and just falling in love with it. So at the core of the space, and we call them literacy labs. Sometimes I might say literacy library for the listener, so that they can kind of get a concept of it. But at the core of the space are the books. And in these spaces, there are at least 1,000 books. 80% of those books will be Black children's literature, because this is an effort to really change the trajectory for Black children. So in our region, about 70 to 75% of Black third graders in our region annually fail the state mandated reading exam. And that's something that is not new. It's been happening for generations. And I think that is part of the reason our community continue to live in poverty or have a hard time thriving. And so that's something that we have to change. That this is what the Believe Project is trying to change. So we're thinking that if we get them in this space where the majority of literature looks like them and talks about their experiences, they can fall in love with the book. So that's the core of the space. We have a partner, Scholastic Book Fairs, who is helping us to fill that those spaces with books. They are helping us, Ready Readers, which is a local organization. They're helping us to fill that
great
space.
Great organization.
Oh, absolutely.
By the way, the Scholastic Book Fair was the bomb when I was a kid. I mean, wasn't that the thing you looked the most forward to?
Yes, that
the book fair.
But I look forward to the book club. So, where you spent $5 and you got a book every month, you looked at the magazine and you picked it out. Long stories about that, but
we digress.
So we're happy to have Scholastic as a partner. And the interesting thing is that most of our partners came through LinkedIn, me simply posting stuff on LinkedIn. And them finding us there. And that's how Scholastic found us, by a lot of the work that we were doing at the Missouri History Museum and posting it on LinkedIn. And, of course, I was told to do that by my nephew, who was much younger than me, and knew about the social media thing. So anyway, so Scholastic is a major partner in helping us get books. Ready Readers is as well. The other part of that space is an anchor program that's called the Ready to Learn program. And it's coming through our local Nine Network station in partnership with PBS Kids, which is just phenomenal. What it is it's an experiential workshop for them that children participate in. It's based on some PBS Kids character. Every kid is introduced to a piece of literature. They get to take that piece of literature home with them. And they do all of these wonderful sort of like problem solving activities to help them to understand the context and the what the story is all about. Once the kids finish, and they do this through technology and media as well. So once the children have completed all four workshops, every kid gets a free PBS Kid play pad that's loaded that's loaded with ebooks and literacy games. And they get a PBS Kids Fire Stick so that they can download all of the PBS educational programming on their computer or television at home. Now, what's really wonderful about that is we're building sort of these 24-hour experiences around literacy for kids. And we're doing it in a way where children don't necessarily need an adult to encourage them to do it. They can just do it themselves. They can build their own agency around it. So we're excited about that partnership. IKEA, the local IKEA store, has decided to partner with us as well, and they build the spaces. And so based on our vision of building a space that looks exactly like your living room or your dining room experience. And so this is not a space that is sort of like kid looking when you go into a preschool or a first grade classroom. It doesn't have child sized chairs. It has adult sized chairs, has adult sized tables and couches and rugs and wonderful lighting. And we do that intentionally because what we're trying to get kids to do is to make the psychological connection that what you do in this space, you can do at home, that there's no disconnection between what you do in the Believe space and what you can do at home. And so we're excited about having IKEA. And then we have this other piece of the space. It's a mural, a unique mural that is different in every space that we open. And it basically depicts the whole idea of what it means to believe. What does it mean to hope in something? What does it mean to soar? And the images in the mural must always show the diversity among Black children and Black faces, because we come in all kinds of colors and shades. And the mural must have language around it that says words like believe and hope and all of those kinds of things. So
an amazing project. We're talking about the Believe Project, and where can you find these? We're going to talk about that when we return after the break here on KMOX Profiles. Julius B. Anthony of St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature is my guest. Stay tuned.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back to KMOX Profiles. Debbie Monterey and Julius B. Anthony with St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature. And we were talking about the Believe Project, and it sounds fantastic. You've gotten all these great places, people and organizations in the community to partner up. Where are the Believe Project? You call them literacy labs, right?
Yes.
So where are they right now, and do you have plans for more?
Sure. So far we've opened four. Our first one was open at the Ferguson Community and Empowerment Center. And that's a very special place for us because it's on the grounds where the Quick Trip was burned down. And Urban League and Salvation Army built a community center for the community there. And so we have a space in that building. The second site is Sister Thea Bowman Catholic School in East St. Louis. So we're excited to be there. The third site is Glasgow Elementary School and the Riverview Garden School District. And the fourth site is Old North Confluence Academy. And what's really interesting about that is we have a community center, a private school, a public school, and a charter school in our first four in terms of getting this out into the community. So we're excited about that. In terms of sites that are open, that are to come this year in 2020. By the end of this year, we expect that we probably will have about 10 sites open, which is a lot of growth in a very short time, but we're excited about it. So we know that one of the sites will be the Missouri History Museum. So we'll have a permanent exhibit there. They are celebrating the fifth year of the Kids Club in June, and we will have a permanent space in the Kids Club.
Oh, I love, my kids love that Kids
Club.
Yeah,
and so we are beyond ourselves with excitement around that one, because that gives us the opportunity to touch all types of children,
yeah,
not just Black children, but the whole spectrum, because all kids need to see every race represented in the books that they are presented with. So we have that one coming up in the fall of next year. We have on tap Kip Wonder Academy will be one of our sites, and Aspire Confluence Academy will be one of the sites. And there are others I probably can't say right now, but the school district that I really, 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 and if they're listening, want to be in, we're in conversations with them, which is the school district I came from, St. Louis Public Schools. But
yeah, that seems a given.
Yeah, right. So, and actually, my dream was to only be there, to only open one site in St. Louis Public Schools at the school that I graduated from, Dunbar Elementary School. And it just didn't happen. But everything happens the way it's supposed to. And Dr. Adams is great. Dr. Paula Knight are great. They're wonderful supporters of the project. And we will most likely have a site probably this spring and then more in the fall.
Can you just give me a little synopsis of what the reaction is of kids who are using these spaces?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a personal story. I guess I'll tell the whole listening audience this personal story. So when the site was finished at the Ferguson Community Empowerment Center, the funder was the Salvation Army. And so Major Gail Ayo, who is one of the ministers with Salvation Army, was very influential in making this happen. She invited me to come and actually see the children in the space. But when I got there, the children hadn't arrived yet. And she said, Julius, I want you to wait and see what happens when they come. They have started taking off their shoes on their own before they enter the space because they have told themselves that this space belongs to us and we want to keep it clean. We want it to be a space that we can always feel safe and happy in. What did I do? I started bawling. I started crying. And I don't consider myself a crier, but I did. I because it made it really real for me. It made it, it was a demonstration of what we had always desired, a space that kids could just call their own. And we call it a yes space for kids. So we tell the adults, this is not your space. This is not your opportunity to control children and tell them what to do. This is not a place where explicit reading instruction should happen. This is simply a place where kids connect with books and they get to decide what they want to do in that space. And so it has been sort of the same reaction at every site. Even when we do the launch and some of the kids get to just come and see the site, they immediately run to the shelves, pick out a book. There's these big, comfortable chairs and they lay back and lounge in the chairs or lay out on the couches. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to see. And what it says to us is that we're really doing something we believe is transformational. Honestly,
because if those kids continue reading,
yes,
and then they're reading bigger books,
yes,
and then they're,
yes,
they're graduating from college.
Yes. Yeah. Because here's the other thing. We really try to focus on kindergarten through third grade in these spaces. And we try to make sure there are lots of books that are appropriate for that age group. But we also put adolescent readers in that space. And a lot of times kids run to those. And even though they may not be able to handle the text, it's something about taking a book that you think is for a higher grade, mm-hmm, than yours, feeling it, touching it, flipping through the pages. That's a connection.
Oh, that graduation to the chapter book is a big deal.
Yeah. And the teacher can't tell me that I can't pick that book. So it's just a wonderful space for kids to just be themselves and fall in love with books.
And so all of that growth with the Believe Project in a very short amount of time.
Yeah. We actually became a 501c3 in August of 2018. And so here we are. And by the end of 2019, we had our first four sites. We have been doing work since 2016, but everything sort of blew up in January of 2018. We do these series of programs called Step Into the Story at the Missouri History Museum. And during the winter month, during December, between Christmas and New Year's, we have a special program that's called Winter Getaway. And so in the for Winter Getaway in 2017, we focused on The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats, which is considered the first nationally published piece of Black children's literature. And the U.S. Postal Service, by chance, commemorated a stamp that year in honor of Peter, who is the protagonist in that story. And we thought that we might have gotten maybe 50 or 60 families because it was our first time doing this experience. And it was the week between Christmas and New Year's. It was cold. It was even snowing the day that we had the event. But we ended up getting close to 300 families to come out and participate.
Wow.
And once we posted that on LinkedIn, Scholastic reached out for a meeting, and it has just been a fast process since then. Scholastic first, and then Nine Network reached out through LinkedIn. And then after that, it was IKEA that reached out through LinkedIn. And here we are.
How about that? So a shout out for LinkedIn.
Yes.
Truly linking organizations together.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about books and getting them in the hands of kids, but let's talk when we return about some books that you might recommend. And you are the president of the St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature. So we'll have to ask you about books by Julius Anthony as
sure.
well.
Okay.
Stay with us here on KMOX Profiles. I'm Debbie Monterey.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
KMOX Profiles, Debbie Monterey, along with Julius B. Anthony of St. Louis, Black Authors of Children's Literature. And we've talked a lot so far, Julius, about the different projects and ways to get books in kids' hands and get them reading and why that's important. But I never asked, as the president of St. Louis, Black Authors of Children's Literature, that presupposes that you have written some children's books.
Sure. I've only written one. And that's what kickstarted this whole organization. I decided to publish a book back in 2014, and it's a collection of poems that I wrote for my kids when I was a first grade teacher, some then, and then some when I was the principal at City Academy. So I always wrote these poems to share with my kids at the beginning of the day that were inspirational, just to get them in the mindset of being ready for the learning for the day. So I took 10 of those poems and put them in a book. And that's how I learned the publishing process. That's also how St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature came to be. And I haven't had an opportunity to publish anymore because I've been really busy on supporting other authors. But I like to share some of the great books that are being published by local authors. And there are a lot of them. And so in our catalog, we have about 20 books now in our organization's catalog. And that's going to grow this year because this year will be the first time we include self-published authors from all over the country. And we get books by them every day, practically. But some of the great local authors are like Asia LaStar Owens, who is a council person in Jennings. And she's written a great book called Rock What You Got. Oh, I didn't say the title of my book.
No, you didn't.
So the title of my book is Me, 10 Poetic Affirmations. And basically, that's what those poems are.
Okay.
They're poems to inspire. Do you want me to recite one?
Sure.
So my favorite one, well, I have two favorites, Believe and the title poem, the focus of the book, which is Me. So I'll recite that one. No one looks the way I do. I have noticed that is true. No one walks the way I walk. No one talks the way I talk. I am special. I am me. There is no one. There is no one. There is no one I'd rather be than me. So that's
hey,
the title.
I like that
the
one.
Book. Thank you. So, so that's me. You have Asia. You have Dr. Kelly Bird, who is a speech pathologist in St. Louis Public Schools. And she has a great book that's called Like Sunshine on an Otherwise Miserable Day, which is a tribute to a famous St. Louis children's author who is known internationally, Dr. Patricia McKissick. And Kelly had a great relationship with her before she passed a couple of years ago. And Dr. McKissick actually helped her to write that book. So we're really excited about that. Be Yourself by Pamela Hornsby Irving, The ABCs of Love, Roger Howard. Another great author in our city, Montrese Williams, and she's written two wonderful books. One is called Seasons, and the other is Cannon's Crash Course, which was illustrated by Kababi, who is
Kababi Bayak.
Yeah,
of course.
Yes, and he's a phenomenal local artist.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And Montrese is a phenomenal storyteller. So if you want to go out and get that those books, that's great. And we have others, Rebecca T. Clark, who has I Dream to Be. And then we have a young man, Mikey Wren. And his book is Mikey Knows Business. And he is, I think, now a sixth grader.
Wow.
In the Jennings Public School System.
And he has his own book.
He has his own book and his own business. So he has a series of concession stands, or what do you call the machines?
Vending machines?
Vending machines. Look at me. Talk about vocabulary, right? So he has a series of vending machines throughout the city, and he's built a significant business off of that.
Wow.
Yeah, he started when he
was... We need to get him in here for a profile.
You must. He has an interesting story. He started when he was in fourth grade, and it has just blown up since then.
Wow.
And so he's
future entrepreneur. Well, yeah. Current entrepreneur.
Yes,
young
absolutely.
Entrepreneur, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
So he has a book out as well. So there's lots of wonderful local authors. There's great national authors. The more popular ones right now are Jacqueline Woodson, and her latest children's book is On the Day You Began, which is a wonderful book. And then you have Jason Reynolds, who is really an adolescent literature author, but he has just put in the, I guess, timeline to publish a children's book in 2020. So we're all looking forward to that. And he's an extremely popular author right now.
Now, if people are curious, but they weren't writing this down,
yeah,
can they go to your website and get,
yes,
get those suggestions?
Absolutely. www.stlblackauthors.com.
STLBlackAuthors.com, easy enough. There's also a bookstore in the St. Louis area that specializes in books featuring children of color.
Absolutely. I See Me Bookstore, and that's EYESEEME. And that's actually their website address as well, .com also. Great, 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 great bookstore. The owners are great, Pamela and Jeffrey Blair. I want to give them a plug because
yeah,
they're great friends of mine, and they do a lot to really promote Black children's literature in our region.
Now, I did not know about you that you were a teacher and a principal. So earlier we talked about how I have a hard time getting my kids to read. We talked a little bit about broader aspects of literacy. But as a teacher,
yeah,
you put your teacher hat on.
Yeah.
Any suggestions for the parents out there who wish their kid would put down their device and pick up a book?
Sure, absolutely. Before I give those suggestions, I do want to say that our organization is working in partnership with the folks at the Eugene Fieldhouse to do an exhibit around children's literature that will run from April to October of this year. And we're going to focus on the first piece of Black children's literature, The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats, and sort of like a timeline or chronological timeline that leads us all up to the current authors that are out there. And we're definitely going to include a lot of Dr. Patricia McKissick's work. So I think it's going to be a phenomenal exhibit. So if you have time over the summer and the spring, go out and check out this exhibit. So in terms of suggestions for parents, and I think we talked a lot about them earlier on, the key is finding out what your kid is interested in, honestly. And I would start giving them some kind of living or practical experience in that interest area. So if they're interested in baseball, take them to some baseball games, get them on a baseball team, and then start finding books that are in that subject area. This is what typically happens with any reader. Once you start reading about things that you're interested in and you fall in love with that, you become more willing to expose yourself to other kinds of topics and things. But you have to get hooked into it first. Some kids are just, they just seem to be natural readers. They come out of the womb ready to read.
I was reading the back of cereal boxes,
yeah,
whatever. If
yeah,
it had words,
yeah,
I was reading it.
Yeah, you were that kid.
Yeah.
But a lot of children, actually your average kid is not that kid. And so it starts with their interests. If they're a kid that's interested in anime, because a lot of children are interested in that, give them some experience in that way. There's some great classes at COCA that have kids learning all about anime. There's some great classes at the community colleges as well. And so you give them sort of an experience and then find books that really hook them into those kind of subject areas. The other thing is conversation, just talking. Talking about things that they're interested in, and then nicely suggesting, I just found this book. It's all about whatever that interest is, and kids will be more interested in picking it up. And don't discount ebooks. Children love technology. We're just living in an era now where they pick it up really early as 1 and 2 years old. And so sometimes just putting it on the phone, putting the book on the phone or putting it on a tablet, kids will start reading. And so you have to look at all the various ways. I know probably in our generation, we only grew up with the book.
Right. I'm still a book person. Yeah, I can't read e-books.
So we love the smell. We love the feel.
I need the bookmark. Yeah. It's my sign of progress.
Yeah, there you go. This is a different generation. And a lot of them first get hooked in into reading things online or on a phone. So I would suggest doing, those are just practical things that you can do. Don't start the ABCs and what every sound, don't push them into reading in that way. That's not my recommendation. That's the school's job. But as a parent, your job is to help them to fall in love with reading, and opposed to doing the explicit stuff. So let the teacher do the phonics and the phonemic awareness and the vocabulary development and word study. Let them do that part. Your job as a parent is to help them to fall in love with reading, and then let them see you read.
And remember, when your kids fall in love with reading, it will have a wonderful, positive trajectory for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
And I want to stress again, STLBlackAuthors.com. Can people, if they are interested in maybe getting involved or contributing to the Believe Project, can they find information there as well?
Absolutely. As well as purchase books.
All right. Julius B. Anthony, president of St. Louis Black Authors of Children's Literature, thanks so much for spending time with us here on KMOX.
Thanks so much for inviting me. This was great.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.